Okay, let's begin this third and final part of our lecture series. I want to take this opportunity once again to thank our hosts, in this case the Heller family. We want to thank you for opening up your beautiful home to us on this Motzei Shabbos. Thank you very much. We also want to take this opportunity once again to thank Eli Lassen for his help in planning. And now finally, for the third time, but for the first time in person, we want to thank Pam Lehman for her efforts in helping coordinate this, in particular finding our hosts. I also want to add one final note, which is in the bottom of the source sheet, of the title of the source sheet, the cover page, and was mentioned in the shul this morning, and that is that on Monday is the yahrzeit of Rav Bach, the 28th of Shvat. And Rav Bach is certainly someone who was involved in his rabbinic career in Geirus. In fact, in the sefer that he published, Matzei Bas Pinchas, there's a chapter on Geirus. It doesn't have anything on our topic tonight, as far as I can see, but still, an important sefer, certainly was an important person in the life of our community, and that we wanted to dedicate the shiur this evening in his memory. We have been discussing the last 2 weeks the general topic of Kabbalas HaMitzvos, the idea that when somebody converts to Judaism, that if not the defining aspect of that conversion is Kabbalas HaMitzvos. The idea that the convert to Judaism accepts upon him or herself the life and responsibility, the yoke of mitzvah obligations and a mitzvah commitment. Of course, it's not a guarantee or a predictor that he will be a tzaddik, never sin. That's unrealistic. It's not even expected. But the commitment has to be there in a way, as we mentioned in the opening shiur, that wouldn't be for someone who was born in. But as I gave you, that's how it goes. If you want to get into a club that you weren't already in, so there are higher standards than for someone who was there. We mentioned the metaphor, I think it was in the first year, that the Sfasemes said in an unrelated context about the difference between someone who has to climb up all the way to the top of the mountain and someone who was born on top of the mountain. It may not be fair, but that's how it goes. If you want to get in, there are certain standards that are required of you that are not necessarily going to be. Of course, keeping mitzvahs is a requirement of all Jews. But if a given Jew does not have that commitment, they don't lose their status of being Jewish, as opposed to becoming Jewish through conversion. So that is something which is, of course, required. And we mentioned as well how important the study of the laws of conversion are, in my opinion, in a related point, because it's through the prism of understanding how one becomes a Jew that even those of us who were born Jewish can learn from a slightly different perspective what is important about Judaism, what is essential to Judaism. You wanted to know about a certain organization, lahavdil, or club, what do they consider important? So one of the clearest litmus tests would be, what do they require for membership? You can learn a lot about our priorities by how we define the process of joining, becoming part of the club, quote-unquote. Another benefit, which I think we have seen, I think both in the halachos, and again, those of us who may know and be friends with Gary Tzedek, it's a very, very valuable thing. Not only because it gives us an opportunity to fulfill lots of mitzvos, if we hopefully treat them the way we're supposed to, as mentioned, but more than that, and I don't remember if I mentioned this last time, but I had recently was reading a collection of articles, and it referenced a theme that President Reagan had mentioned in some of his speeches, where he used to say that every now and then, he said, as native-born Americans, find somebody who emigrated to America and talk to them for a little bit. It'll remind you about what's so beautiful and so wonderful about America. In other words, when you're born in a place and you live there your whole life, you take it for granted. When you meet someone who, you know, take together a boat and risk life and limb to get here, you forget about what's so special. So it's the same thing, I think, alachas kama v'kama. Those of us who were fortunate enough to be born Jewish, if we don't know, we should look for people who made the decision, whether it's to become Balei Tshuva, or even more dramatically, to become Gerim, because it really reminds us in ways which we often ourselves don't appreciate about what's so beautiful about this lifestyle, and this way of life, and this religion. We spent last week discussing not the ideal, but very often what is less than ideal situation. The first week was discussing the theoretical ideal of how one converts and what that involves in terms of a commitment to mitzvos. But the last week we discussed something that's unfortunately much more practical and less than ideal, which, as I mentioned, is probably the number of cases of people who convert just for the sake of marrying a Jewish spouse is more than all of the other reasons that people convert combined. And that poses many, many halachic complications. We're not going to review the whole shir that we said last week now, but just to kind of review the thread, the salient thread that we've been carrying, if the idea is that the purpose and the essential ingredient of conversion is that one commits to a lifestyle of Torah and mitzvos, and there's a sincere motivation, which is part of what we discussed the first week about why someone wants to convert, etc. So if this person may have wonderful romantic reasons, and on a human level we could be very empathetic to them, and almost jealous, such a wonderful love that a person's even willing to convert for the sake of that love, but that's all well and good, but it doesn't seem to have anything to do with Kabbalah Samitzvos. So if someone is converting just for that purpose, to marry a Jewish spouse, is the conversion really, in fact, good conversion, is a legitimate conversion? And we're not going to rehash the topic other than to say we saw last week, it's complicated. It's very, very complicated, which is why it's clear from the Gemara and the Shulchan Aruch, one is not supposed to perform such conversions. It's clear, you're not supposed to convert someone. It's also complicated because the Shulchan Aruch says, borrowing from the Gemara, but if you did the conversion, in many, not all, but in many cases, at least post facto, b'di'eved, it may be a good conversion. Knowing when that is and when that isn't is very, very complicated. And that's what we discussed last week. And we're now ready for not the exhaustive completion of all laws of conversion, but at least the completion of our series. And this is the other very, very practical and very, very sensitive topic. And this is the question of conversion of minors. It can be just complicated in a simple situation. What's a simple situation? A family is converting, and they have children. So not only are the adult parents converting, they want to convert their children as well. That's a simple case. And as we'll see, it is very complicated. Halachically. Some got all the same complications, which with much more sensitivity and emotional angst are situations such as the following. Let's say you have a couple who is not religious. Let's say that they have tried for years to have children and were unsuccessful. And now they're adopting a child that was not born Jewish. They come home after this five-day-old baby, let's say, in an ideal situation. And on day five or at latest day six, phone rings. Rabbi, we just adopted a child that we'd like to convert him or her. Do. Is that going to be a legitimate conversion? Or what about a case which to this day still occurs and was rampant in the late 19th and early 20th century? We'll see a number of the tshuvas where you have situations of an intermarried couple where in many of the cases the wife who's not Jewish isn't even converting. But the father wants to convert the child. The Jewish father wants a Jewish son, or a Jewish daughter wants a Jewish child, who he's then going to raise with his non-Jewish spouse. But Rabbi, right, very, very complicated. And depending on where you're a rabbi, very difficult to be on the other end. The pressures can be enormous. So let's see how these cases play out. And we'll see why this is not just an unbelievable drama, both objectively, but one of the real issues at the heart of the matter is the same issue we've been talking about for the last 2 weeks, the idea of Kabbalah Samitzos. Take a look at source number one on the top of your sheet. This is the Locus Classicus. This is the source in the Talmud for this question of conversion of minors, Ger Katan. Amar Rav Huna, the famous halacha, Ger Katan Matbilin Oso Al Das Bezdin. We do convert minors, but there's a central and, in fact, more active role that the Bezdin will play in the conversion of minors than they would with the conversion of an adult. You do the tvila, the mikvah, which we'll presume now means it's a metaphor for the whole process, but you do so with the active involvement Al Das Bezdin. So the Gemara asks, what's Kamash Malon? what's the big deal? Why? Sounds like we're trumpeting something. What's the big deal? We know about conversion already. Deschusulo, says the Gemara. By going through with this process, we are positing an axiomatic truth. That it's a schus, it's a benefit for a child to be converted to Judaism. And we have a principle in halacha, zachin la'adam shelov afanav. That applies in far more mundane, prosaic situations. You're walking down the block. I'll give you an example which would be very relevant to my family. I'm walking down the block, and lo and behold, I come across something. Leave aside the details of Mitzia. Let's assume that I find a lost object, which I'm not going to have to return to anybody. I find something that's Hefker. There's a sign that says Hefker, this is ownerless. Wouldn't you know it? It's a vintage rookie Eli Manning card. He plays for the Giants. They play in the Super Bowl tomorrow. Now, I know, well, you know, let's not use me because it's a little more complicated. So one of you who now know that my son, Yaakov's favorite football player, is Eli Manning. Now, you think, well, wouldn't this be great? You know, he's a good kid, Yaakov. And he's so exuberant about so many things. It'll be so good, wonderful. I'll give him this Eli Manning card. I'm just going to give it to him. Because if I give it to him, that means when I pick it up, I'm taking it for myself. But halacha says you can go further. Zachen la'adam shlovanav. You know this is something that somebody wants. You can pick it up, and by so doing, acquire it for them. It's already theirs. Let's say in between now and then it got stolen. Who would be the party? Who would have standing to sue, to claim against the thief of the new Eli Manning card? If you lifted it up, zachen, you acquired it on behalf of Yaakov, Yaakov could claim it. There's something called zachen. You're allowed to. Now, the truth of the matter is, that's all presuming that the person wants it. If it turns out when you go to, you don't get to say, you know, I saw this house. You know, it's really, they were the asking price was $1 million, but they dropped it to $500,000. Zachen lo adam shelov, I signed you up for it. And you go to the guy, he says, that's nice, but I don't got the $500,000 either. Too bad, it's yours. Zachen lo adam shelov. We don't do that, of course. When you're given the opportunity, when you find out about it, when it becomes one of, you have a right to say, actually, I appreciate the thought, but for me, this is not a zechus, but a chov. And then, of course, then it's not yours. But other than you nullifying it, from the time the person lifted up or take acquisition, they can do it for you. That's a general, interesting, but a general principle of halacha, which Rav Huna applies here. The katan is a minor. What can they do for themselves? Halachically, nothing. But what can we talk about a baby? But the Bezdin, Aldas Bezdin, we can do it. We will be Poel the Geirus. We will affect the conversion for them. Aye, what did they do? Maybe they don't want it. Zachen la'adam shlovafanav. Even though we don't know that yet, one way or the other, we can presume that they will, because we have established that converting to Judaism is a zechus. Chavin la'adam shlovafanav, you cannot do. You can't do something that would be to the detriment of somebody on their behalf. Plenty of people do things to their detriment of themselves. Right? You can't stop. Sometimes people are their own worst enemy. You can't always stop them. But I can't do anything for you that would hurt you. But I can do something that would help you. I can convert you. That's what the Gemara says. And the Gemara says, really? Is it really true? I'm surprised. Ma'u the same a second line over Kambev Keira Nechale. Come on, isn't it? Wouldn't it be so much easier to be not Jewish? There's so many more things they'd be allowed to do, allowed to eat, allowed to see. So who says it's a schus to become Jewish? Maybe it's a detriment to become Jewish. So the Gemara says no. Hani mili gadol. As an adult who's already acquired a taste for the fun things in life. So they may or may not have the virtue of wanting to leave that to become Jewish. But we can't assume, let's be honest. We could never assume that somebody who has lived that life would want to walk away from it to become Jewish. He's already Tom Tam Yisura. Aval Katan, a child who doesn't know better, frankly, Zechusulo, we can assume that we know it's beneficial. Gemara asks a number of questions back and forth, which I have deleted. And the Gemara then concludes with the second case, which may be different than the first one. We'll have to see what was the first one. The Gemara says, a new case. Gershon is Gairo, Bonavu Benosa Vimo. Now you have the whole family. Mr. Ger and Mrs. Ger and little cute Yingle Ger and Mamala Ger. They all convert together. And there the Gemara seems to imply we may not need the active role of Bezdin. Why? Because the parents supply what is missing for the child. Dinei Galahu, Bamai Du'avid Avuan. A child wants to go along with what the parents are doing. In a normal, healthy, intact family, a child wouldn't want that they should all be of one religion and I should be of another. The child wants to be together with the parents. So, it sounds like that the first case was when the parents weren't converting. Either you have a parent who is going to remain non-Jewish, but they want their child to convert, which would be a little bit surprising, but it could happen, I guess. Or you have a situation, like I mentioned before, of the adoption, where the parents are already Jewish, but then they're not the biological parents. So in one of those cases, this is what Rashi says. Look at Rashi, the first Rashi describing the first case, Ein lo av. It seems from Rashi, and the post can point this out, that the ability for a parent to decide, for whatever reason, this is not our topic today to discuss, it seems to be a particular right of the father. The mother does not seem to have the same ability to convert the child as the father. If a mother alone would bring her child for conversion, that would still need more of an active involvement of the Beis Din, as opposed to the father. Why that is, not our topic. But the bottom line is, if you'll have a family, or at the very least a father, bringing the child, so then you don't need the active involvement of the Beis Din any more than for another convert, because you have the parent, you have the father, excuse me. But if you don't have that, for whatever the other scenarios we're talking about, that's the first case, al das Beis Din. We'll have to see in a few moments, there's even a third scenario, which is fascinating. And finally, the third part of our Gemara, though, so all of this is the baby is 1 year old, 2 years old, 3 years old, 4 years old. Let's take a girl. Named her Shoshana, and she's wonderful, and she's happy in school, and now she's approaching Bas Mitzvah. Says the Gemara, last line, in the name of Yosef. Hidilu, when the Gier or Gioris, our little Shoshana, when she becomes Bas Mitzvah, Yecholim Limchos. She could say, you know, I have no interest in this. Too much Hebrew homework. I am not interested in this. I want to go to the movies on Shabbos. I don't want to go to shul. I'm not interested. And if she does that, retroactively, she's not Jewish. An adult convert cannot do such a thing. Right? As my kids would say, there's no backsies. Right? If the original conversion is flawed, that's a different story. But if there was a legitimate conversion, and years later, I think, if I'm not mistaken, I don't know for sure, but just based on my reading of the public record, isn't this what happened to Laura Schlesinger, Dr. Laura? I think she was an Orthodox convert, if I'm not mistaken. And a few years ago, she decided she doesn't want to be Jewish anymore. It don't work. Whether she likes it or not, she's Jewish forever, and the expectations of her are like every one of you and me. But a child has a different status. Why? Because we just saw. They have this kind of intermediate status while they're a youth. Why? As a minor. Because either their parents or the Beis Din played an active role in their conversion. It wasn't all theirs. It wasn't their decision. We presumed they would want it. Deschus hulo. But just like I said, if I presume that a person wanted to live near me, and therefore I put a down payment on their behalf, and then they say, no, I don't want it, they have a right to turn it down. So too, the child has a right to turn it down when they reach the age of maturity. However, that was point 3a. 3b, says the Gemara, but you only get one bite at that apple. But once they're ready, Bar Bas Mitzvah, and at least initially did not say we don't want it, then they're like an adult. They are an adult, but now they're like an adult convert. Shuv eni yachol limchos. Then they can never go back. Okay? This is, with a little bit of a deleting, in essence, you are now experts. This is the source in all of Shas for the topic of the conversion of minors. But as you saw, it is layered, it's wrapped tight. There's a lot of juicy facts and important information here. I want to just point out that there's a third scenario which could happen, which we would convert a child on. And this is an inference that the great halachist, the Shach, points out in his inference of the Lashon of the Shulchan Aruch. Take a look, two sources down. Shulchan Aruch, based on his reading of Shulchan Aruch, he says, Mashma Midato. What if, for example, the child knocks on the door of the rabbi by himself without either parent? I want to convert. What do we do it? Says Shach, yes. Kamash Mulan, the Av Agav the Ein Lo Das, even though it's still a child, the minor, a minor doesn't usually have halachically considered maturity to make life-changing decisions for themselves. Nevertheless, shomim lo. We are willing to do it. Tzchushu lo, v'zachem adam shalo b'fanav. Jim, was this the correct pronunciation of this? In locus parentis? Did I say that correct?
I have no idea.
Oh man, you're our lawyer.
There must be another lawyer.
Oh, Tali. Well, Tali is... I know it doesn't involve the type of law that, that Tali practices. Already, so we got three lawyers. I'm sorry. I'm looking in this direction. For some reason, I was just staring at you. I'm sorry.
In the middle, between the two.
We're doesn't that mean... You know what I'm trying to say.
We're trying to get away from Latin and the law. Just
oh, is that true?
Because we don't understand it.
Anymore. Oh, you know, I would have gone to law school, but it was all that Latin. I didn't realize they were trying to get away from it. It means when somebody else is standing in for the parent. The Beis Din plays the role of the parent. This is a legal term. We this is a legal mechanism in American law. There are times where I was still impressed, Jim. You don't have to worry. There are times where the Beis Din can stand in, or someone else sometimes stands in the role of the parent. It's clear from the Gemara there's a right that the parents have, and certainly the father, to effect such a conversion. And even when you don't have that, sometimes the Beis Din will step in and play that parental role.
Even if the father said, that's very nice that you went to the rabbi, little boy, but we don't want you to convert, we're not allowing you to.
How that would play out practically, I'm not sure. I'm not sure. But from a strictly halachic perspective, if you want to know, can the Beis Din do it? The answer is yes. That's what the Shach says. Because it's no different, ultimately, than the original case. In the end of the day, since we believe this is what's a good thing, we would be willing to do it. Whether we would do it or not, that's a different question, I guess. That's more detailed.
But the opposition of the natural parents doesn't affect the halachic result.
Apparently not in this case. That's what the Shach says. Okay, he doesn't spell out exactly where was the father or the mother, you know, there. You know? It didn't say either way. Let's say it's an orphan or something.
The assumption is that the opinion of the child's natural parents is irrelevant.
It's not needed. I would say it that way. It's not needed. That's correct.
Look, Lamasa, to the parents of this child at age 12 or 13 needs to sit the child down.
Yes. We're gonna get that.
And if they haven't,
we're gonna get to that too.
Do that later.
We're gonna get to that too. Okay? Now I want to skip section 2, but just to let you know what's there. If we were especially in the Beis Medrash, we would be really focusing on section 2, in the sense that this idea of how does the Zachin work, just the mechanism from a strictly legalist perspective, are not at all simple. And there's three different approaches in the Rishonim. Just suffice it to say the following salient point. According to some opinions, to whatever extent this means, but it is relevant, a ger katan, a minor who converts, is only what's known as a ger midrabanan. It doesn't work midaraisa. Because there's so many weaknesses in this, which we're going to explore in a moment. When the Gemara says it works, it only means on a rabbinic level, but they can only become full-fledged Jew when they assent on their own as an adult. Other opinions in Rishonim, even more fascinatingly, say no, even as a child, they're a full-fledged 100% Jew. So why that is, what the mechanisms are, time does not allow us to explore. A more basic question, which I hear paraphrased or quoted from you, one of the classic contemporary English works on the topic was a work published in the early 1990s by Rabbi Mori Slam, and he very succinctly and beautifully asked the question, which is how this topic relates to the previous 2 weeks. If we said the last 2 weeks, especially the first week, that Kabbalah HaMitzvos, accepting the yoke of mitzvos, is an essential ingredient of becoming a Jew, so how can a child do that? They have no ability, no maturity to make such a commitment. How do you get past that? And there's basically two approaches in the commentaries to answer that question. The first, offered by some contemporary authorities, and here I gave you an example of an article written many years ago, but when I say many, I mean in the 20 or the 30 range, by Bezalel Zsolti, who was the chief rabbi of Yerushalayim and one of the great Talmid Chachamim, and early in pre-state Yerushalayim, early Yerushalayim, modern Yerushalayim. And he says, in essence, you're right, you need Kabbalah HaMitzvos, as he puts it beautifully, and in a certain sense this would have been relevant for our first week's year as well, as he says on the second line, V'zeh gam b'kabbalas ha-Torah mitzvos, shai v'lo kabbalas ha-Torah v'mitzvos, ein zu geirus klal. Right, there is no such thing. It's reminiscent of who? Of Soloveitchik quoted from his father. We saw that the first week. The whole concept of geirus, of conversion, without kabbalas mitzvos is a non sequitur. Right? How can it get started? It's the essence of Judaism. So Rzolti, it's true too. So how could you have a minor? So Rzolti, when the Gemara says that the Bezdin takes an active role, it meant active with a capital A. They even do that. The Bezdin accepts mitzvos on behalf of the child. They don't just dunk the child in the mikvah. It's not just that the mikvah could be a swimming pool, or it could be a mikvah. So the Bezdin provides the kavana that the going in the mikvah has meaning. And if it would be a boy, that this is not just a medical circumcision, but a halakhic circumcision. That's true. That the Bezdin does do. So the Bezdin does a third thing, more importantly. The Bezdin provides the third ingredient to conversion. Kabbalah semitzvos. The child never had the Kabbalah themselves. Exactly. That's what happens when she reaches bas mitzvah, or reaches bar mitzvah. He has to have a Kabbalah mitzvah for himself. But until then, the Bezdin did it. Perhaps more fascinatingly is a suggestion that was offered by the Rishonim and was even picked up by some Achronim. Tosfos, for example, implies it, and I'll take you to the next source which says it more succinctly and directly. The Shita Mekubet is one of the other Rishonim, quote the following. It's a one-liner, but it's all there. Ditzar Kabbalah, even though we need a Kabbalah Samitzvos, and where does the child have the power to do that? Hani Mili Heche De Esher. Aval Bekatan Lo Efshar. You only require what is possible. But something that's not possible is not required. I'll give you as an example, a paradigm for this. We haven't even discussed it for obvious reasons. But the Gemara says, originally in the time of the Beit HaMikdash, there was a whole other thing that was part of conversion. A special karban. So Gemara says, well, now that we don't have a Beit HaMikdash, can be no more converts? So Gemara says, similar answer. When you'll have a Beit HaMikdash, you have to bring a karban. And when there's no Beit HaMikdash, we allow conversion even without the karban. So there's an interesting machlokas. What will happen? Meheri Yavana, the third Beit HaMikdash, do we say that all the converts from the generations will have to get in line, ASAP I might add, when the third Beit HaMikdash is there, to bring that karban, right? They converted in the 5th century, in the 7th century, in the 12th century. They all have to go and bring their karban. Or do we say no, since they converted full-fledged without it, so they don't need to do it? That's an interesting side machlokas. But you need a karban, now you don't have a Beit HaMikdash. Okay, you don't have to have a karban. Says the Shita Mekubet, says, so too for a minor when it comes to Kabbalah and mitzvahs. An adult who could commit and doesn't, that lack of commitment nullifies the conversion. That speaks volumes. But a child who doesn't have that ability, the non-commitment is not a statement. It's not a statement about anything. They're too busy running around after the Eli Manning card, or playing Barbies, or whatever else is interesting to them at that age. They're not of maturity to make this type of commitment. And therefore, by not committing, which they can't, it's okay. Fascinating. As much as we say Kabbalah is important, it's important when it's possible. But if it's not possible, says the Shita Mekubet, says, it's okay. So you could have, if you want to know, could there be a convert without Kabbalah mitzvos? According to some authorities, the answer is yes. A child. A child is a convert who was lacking at that time their Kabbalah mitzvos. And if you want to just put two things together, if you say that it's a conversion midaraisa, that's really fascinating. And there are those who say it.
Doesn't it cut against from a couple weeks ago, some of the opinions in terms of role of Kabbalahs and mitzvahs, that it's not just an element.
Right,
is
right, there. Right, right, right. So maybe they would hold, like Rav Zsolti, that the Bezdin provides it. Could be. Or maybe they would say again, they were referring to adults. I want to mention one more thing practically, which is interesting, because it's always been fascinating to me, and I really wanted to study it recently. And then I want to get to the last part of the shiur, which is really fascinating, which is really the highlight of the shiur, I think. Which is the question of what to do when the parents aren't from. Really interesting. But one last thing, which is the end of the Gemara. The end of the Gemara was that the child gets a chance to say no thank you. Now, one of the very interesting practical things is the Gemara has said that's only true when they become an adult. But if they wait 1 minute, sha'achas, too late. Todd asked, well, do they have to affirm it? What if they didn't even know, right? A generation ago, we didn't tell children even if they were adopted and things like that. Where does that all play out? So you should know it's a good kasha. The Rishonim asked the question. Tosfos asked the question. The Ritva asked the question. There's probably five or six answers. I gave you three. Number one, here in the Ritva, here in Roman number four. First answer he gives is just the way you see he asked the question, even in the text. Hey, Efshar Litzamse, how are we going to know that precise moment when she becomes Bas Mitzvah, where we could say, ah, now's your one and only chance. Ah, too late, you missed it. That sounds like a game show. You know, like, this is too serious. Hey, Efshar Litzamse, how would we know? Three answers. Number one, he says, second line, Tirtzu Atosvus, Te'enim Gerim Gemurim Achem Odiyin Osam Matan Sarav Onshin Shalmitzvus Kishi Gilom. Number one, he says, is it's not an automatic thing. It's not just a time thing. It's not just chronological. You have to tell them. You have to tell the child you were converted as a child. And this is why the benefits of Torah mitzvot and the responsibilities of it. And until you tell them, the clock has to start ticking. Once you tell them, whether you do it on the 12th birthday or you do it on the 12th and a half birthday, so they're not a full ger until then, they're still that immediate state. But once you tell them, then, you know, it's like, I can only imagine, honey, could you sit down? I have something to talk to you about. Mom, I did my homework. It's not about homework. This is a little bit more serious. You have to sit down. You got to tell them. If you haven't told them yet. And then they have a decision. That's answer number one. Skip answer number two for a second. Go to answer number three. The Ritva says on the bottom line, the second to last line, Aval, Yei Shlomer, what are we talking about? A case? B'moche v'heleches mitoch katnus until ha'achar gadlus. Shmogodlo sha'achas b'lomacha. Says the Ritva, and the Ran and others say this as well. Imagine your typical adolescent angst, and this is a child apparently who knows, or you told, you were converted, we converted as a family, you were adopted, whatever the case is. And since before they hit Bar Mitzvah, since before they hit Bas Mitzvah, I don't want this. No, you won't make me go. I can imagine one of those kids cheers, chance, the bang on the table. I won't go. I'm not going to day school. I'm not going to yeshiva. I don't want to go to shul. So when they're 11 and whatever, you make them and you already converted them. So, but we knew from before they hit Bar Bas Mitzvah they had no interest. And then it wasn't just like, then they hit the Bar Bas Mitzvah, you tell them, this is for real now. And they're still screaming, even after the Bar Mitzvah, right? The rabbi already gave them the Kiddush cup, and they already, got all the presents, so the presents was okay. But the whole time they're screaming, no, I don't want that, I don't want. Says the Ritz, if you have a case like that. So yes, it was only a chronological thing, but you trust me, you covered the bases. So from before the Bar Bas Mitzvah till after the Bar Bas Mitzvah, they were screaming, I don't want. If they don't want, they don't want. Then they're not Jewish anymore. Neither of these, though, are the exact way that the Shulchan Aruch quotes the halacha. Shulchan Aruch quotes the halacha in a slightly different way, and that comes from answer number two in the Ritva, which was really already said before the Ritva in a Tosfos. Take a look at the next source by Tosfos. Tosfos quotes from the Ri, Yitzchak. L'chi gadla b'nahaga minhag Yehudas. In other words, what is required for a child who had been converted to become a complete convert as an adult is to practice Judaism. Once they practice halacha, once they do mitzvos after the Bar Bas Mitzvah, so that is considered as much or more powerful than a verbal assent. Just by doing mitzvos, that is considered already an affirmation that this is what I want. Until that point, if they haven't done mitzvahs, right? They're sleeping away. You say, happy birthday, I'm sleeping away. So then, true. But it doesn't matter. Unlike the first opinion, they may already know. They may already know. But it's not a question of what they know. Here we go by deed. Let's just look at the Shulchan Aruch, see how he quotes it. Look at the last line. When do we say a child has a chance to say, I'm not interested? If they haven't done any mitzvos. This is much more, I don't know if this is a fair term or accurate, but it's more machmir. The window is closed a lot more according to this approach on the child. However, even this, says Rav Moshe Feinstein, getting back to, I think it was, I can't remember who asked me this question before. Even this, says Moshe Feinstein, is still based, even this idea that any mitzvahs they do, but only if they are aware of the consequences of doing mitzvahs, namely because they know that they were converted. However, says Rav Moshe in a tshuva here on the top of page 3, if a child or an adult was never told that they had been converted, they grew up their whole life wondering, you know, I don't, everyone says, you know, I don't have my mother's eyes, I don't have my father's nose, but they never knew exactly what that meant. It could be either 25, 35, or 55 years old. Says Rav Moshe, and let's hope they've done hundreds and thousands of mitzvos. None of that cemented their conversion because they didn't know. Once you tell them, so then if they keep on doing mitzvos, so then you have a long delayed affirmation of the geiros, which should have happened when they are bar mitzvah. But if they never know, and you only tell them now, we don't say, well, he's an adult. The Gemara says only a child can just say no. Years of adulthood do not take away that right. There's an, I have to borrow the phrase, there's an inalienable right that a person who was converted as a child always has. They only get it once, but it can never be taken away from them. And that is that they do have a chance to walk away. It's supposed to happen right when they turn bar mitzvah, but if it was delayed, says Rav Moshe, just read the by the bottom three lines, Kishelo yodiyu osam, if you never told them, Hari yicholu limchos liolam, kol zman sheyizvadu. Once they know, it doesn't matter how old they are, they have a right to turn away.
So if that was a woman, right, and she had children, then her children, and she decides to turn away,
correct,
her children are not Jewish.
That is what we call a mess. Yeah. 100%. Exactly. Big time mess.
But what if a kid made a mistake? It's a rebellious adolescent, and at 17 they go to Israel on a trip, and they realize they didn't mean what they said. They didn't understand. They were just troubled. So they have to start over. They don't get another chance.
No, you can always get another chance. They can convert as an adult. If they were sincere and they wanted to convert, we would accept them.
You said there's only one chance.
No, no, one chance to turn away. No, so they have one chance to say, I don't want to be Jewish. If you want to be Jewish, well, you know, that's like, you know, you get one chance to say no. You got all the chances to say yes. If you want to convert, the question is, what's the, so Ramosha and others, I mean, the practice is, you know, we try to tell them, and that's why it makes most, so we try to have this all take place when they're a younger age, when there's more likelihood. They're not as likely to be rebellious at 12 or 13. Right? And if they're having, if they're being raised in a Shomer Shabbos, you know, in a frum family, the likelihood is whatever, you know, around the edges is less than perfect, the likelihood is that they're not. I mean, how, imagine a 12 or 13-year-old saying that. It's not likely. Which is why we'd like to tell them as soon as possible. It's a huge mistake on every possible level to delay. Right? In that sense, I would say perhaps the mental health profession has caught up with halacha.
Because you don't get an honest answer. Because a 12-year-old is not going to tell you.
Well, you're raising a point, which is a part of the old issue, which is kind of the half, you know, smirk, you know, when at the bar, or the, you know, at the bar mitzvah, you know, the rabbi says, you know, you're now a man. You know, and he's a pipsqueak. He's 13 years old. But the answer is, but from a halachic perspective, you do get an honest answer. We do consider that legitimate. Okay. Now, I want to spend the next bit of time that we have, 20-25 minutes, giving you a little bit of a summary of what I consider some of the most fascinating tshuvos around. That in many of the cases I included the question or some other ancillary information because the living halacha, the living Judaism in these questions is so fascinating. Perhaps one of the earliest sources to discuss the question of converting children raised in either intermarried families or even just non-frum families, comes from a rock'em sock'em shootout. No holds barred battle royal between two of the great giants of the late 19th century. Rav Azriel Hildesheimer, one of the great leaders of German Orthodoxy, and Rav Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer, a name who I believe I last mentioned in the home of the laymans, during our lecture series of 2 years ago about religious Zionism. He was one of the fathers and founders of the religious Zionist movement. And he had, and Rav Israel Hildesheimer, who on many other levels you would say could be kindred spirits, they had a wicked debate playing out in various public forums, always with respect, but I mean from an intellectual perspective, of great intensity, that started off in a case which is not really relevant to us, but spilled over. The case, which again, I don't have time to read it, the Shuva, it takes place in 1864 in a journal called Der Israelite, which discusses a situation which I believe was happening in New Orleans. He says it was America, Orleans, I think he's talking about New Orleans. But we'll see, it was repeated multiple times in Europe and other places, but this is the first case that they're talking about. It was in journals. There were intermarried couples, Jewish men, non-Jewish women, where there was nothing to do with conversion, no interest in conversion. Who would want to be Jewish in 1864 in New Orleans, for goodness sake? But the Jewish father wanted that his son should have a bris milah. I don't need to tell you, for a Jewish male, all of that symbolism of a circumcision, couldn't imagine. It's one thing I married out, but my son should have a circumcision. The rabbi in New Orleans was thought, this is a terrible thing. You're going to let a male do a bris on a non-Jewish child. And not only did the rabbi tell the mole he shouldn't do it, but the rabbi was going to put in chayrim the mole who did it. So the whole discussion, it made it into the journal. And apparently, among others, Rav Israel Hildesheimer felt that the rabbi in New Orleans was wrong. Excuse me, was right. Should not let such circumcisions happen. With Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer here, you should just see, as much as I gave you here on page 3, good for it, this is not even one-tenth of long as the tshuva. And there's a second tshuva as well. It's two back-to-back tshuvas that are published. Which are, when I printed the first on the computer, they're about 14 pages. Rav Israel Hildesheimer writes, and again, it's important to stress, you see in the opening line, tremendous respect and reverence for Rav Israel Hildesheimer. He says, what can I do? I disagree with you. And he was of the opinion that we should give a circumcision to these children. And I wish I had the time, but for those of you who are capable, go through even the miniature version that I've given you. He makes fascinating arguments. He has a very universalistic approach. He doesn't advocate proselytizing to non-Jews, but he comes very close. How the whole world has a shaychus to Torah, and we want to do everything we can to make it easy for people to convert. And if they weren't circumcised at all, and now as an adult, that's going to be a huge impediment. But if they were already circumcised, that's a huge thing that's out of the way. Whether he's right or wrong, that's his mentality. We want to make it as easy as possible. And the father, he says, especially, he writes in parentheses, wants his non-Jewish wife will die. Let's hope that he'll want to do tshuva. But if he's got a non-Jewish son, that's going to be, you know, a son that's not even gemal, you know, he's not going to want to do it. It's going to be a whole mess. We'll make everything better for the tshuva and for everything if we'll just circumcise this non-Jewish boy. And then toward the bottom of the part I have here, he says, but let's say, you know, he comes back a little bit to reality. He says, let's say there's no tshuva here. Let's say this is no NCSY or Isha Torah, you know, success story. Let's say they just stay not from. The father stays not from. And no, he says, it doesn't matter. He says, let's say they want to convert this boy, even though he's still married to this non-Jewish woman. Says Sears Kalischer, it's still a good thing. They could convert such a child. Take a look towards the bottom. Really towards the bottom. He thinks it's going to happen. He says at the end of one line of below Suffolk, you see where I have the last part that's underlined. Kasher yigadlun yoreim shiyadbilu al dasbezin. This father who clearly cares about Judaism, he wants the boy to be circumcised, so when he'll hit 13, he'll want to convert the boy. And the child will want to. Why? What does the child know about Judaism? Not so much except for one thing. That his father's Jewish. And listen to what he says again. He's expanding for sure, but basing himself on the line we saw in the Gemara. He's going to want to be like his father. His father's Jewish. I want to be Jewish. He's so optimistic. He says, I'm such a child. Who knows how good it could be? There are times she gadola Yisrael, Yitzmachu mayhem. This child could grow up to be a big Talmid Chacham. He could have children or Talmid Chachamim. He could be a Shoshana Miben Achuchim, right? Poetically. I mean, there's such incredible literature here. And you'll tell me, Masha Choshev Shlo Yilmo Das Yisrael Eitzel HaNachris? How much, come on? His mother's not even Jewish. How much Torah is he going to learn in this house? Say, you know, don't worry about it. The Balav Hachibo said of a rabbim, Leis Kazos, Harbi Shei Nogin B'Das Yisrael. What, and the Jews are so frum? And if this would be a Jewish mother, the child would be raised in such a better house? Nebuch, there's such assimilation anyway. No one's frum anyway. We don't worry about that. That's separate. Ain't on our rabbim lezeh. B'mash Ein Yichon Limchos. What can we do? We have to do what we can do, and we have to open the door, he says, we shouldn't push them away. Maybe all of the good things are going to come from this. Even if the mother will not convert, and especially if the mother herself wants to convert, we should definitely convert this child. Now, one thing is for sure true, at least at this point, there's nobody who's from. So Kabbalah and mitzvahs you don't have. And yet, he clearly says you can convert the child.
What is the objection?
This was Rav Kalish. Look at the bottom of the page. Hakadon Tzvi Hirsch Kalish. Turn over the page again. I gave you one paragraph from 10 pages. Hildesheimer responds. And he said, again, with great respect, the Beis says, I don't know what you're talking about. What, how could we possibly do such a thing? Leave aside all of the other ancillary points. Let's try to be focused because we're running late. Look at the last part that I've underlined. He says, you're not doing a favor to such a child. You're doing a terrible thing. The damage you're doing to this child far outweighs the benefit. What do we need this for? We're not supposed to be proselytizing. We're going to obligate this child his whole life in mitzvos. That's a favor to a child. What did he ever do to us? Nebuch, we're going to give this responsibility to a child who, in all likelihood, you know, take your head out of the clouds, Rav Kalish, in all likelihood, there's not going to be some wave of tshuva hitting this family. The child's going to grow up as an assimilated Jew in New Orleans or in Germany or wherever, not know anything about Shomer Torah mitzvos, but yet I'll be obligated in it. That's not a favor to the child. That's terrible for the child. We're going to give this unbelievable responsibility to the child and he doesn't even know about it. He's being raised by a non-Jewish mother and we want to obligate him in mitzvahs? What is he saying? What he's saying is something which later poskim are going to pick up and amplify. What did the Gemara say? The Gemara said that why do we convert a child, the schus hulo, to be a Jew is a schus. Says of Rizul Hildesheimer, it's only as a chus if you're going to do it. But someone who's not going to practice Judaism, it's not only that it's not good, it's par, it's worse than that. Because now they're obligated in all these things they were never obligated. Every time this boy goes and eats a non-kosher piece of meat, aveira. Every time he drives on Shabbos, aveira. But he wasn't Jewish. To live like a mensch, keep the seven mitzvos, and he's going to Olam Haba. We do it a favor? This is a chov. This is a schus. You can't do it. This is no schus. And this basic argument, what was, again, he didn't formulate it in such a direct point-counterpoint way, but what was Rasir's Kalisher's answer to that? Nechalei lavid b'mayda avuha. He says, there's a different schus. The schus is he wants to be like his father. And for a child to be like their father, that's a schus. And therefore, he says, yes, now, which is a more compelling argument. At this point, the tshuvas are one-on-one. But let's see what else there is. Yes, quickly, I'm sorry.
We're talking about converting this child who had the bris when he was a baby, converting the child when
they're... No, converting him now. No, if they're converting when they're adult, that's their decision. Converting them as a child.
So giving them the bris is converting them?
No, he means, and do that, he said, you'll start with the bris, and then you'll take them to the big one. Yes. Okay. Rav Yitzchak Shmelkis, who died slightly later, he died in 1906, authors of the Tshuva Space Yitzchak, also discusses this. And in fact, in one Tshuva, he has seemed to have two different opinions. So in the first opinion, he says, like Rav Azriel Hildesheimer, When do we do this for a child? Im yesh tikva, at least if there's a hope, a reasonable expectation, shaben yigadol al pidas Yisraeli. The Jew will be, the child will be raised from. Therefore, you can go ahead with it, yechol namalo lat bilo. The im ain is naikados, but if the family doesn't practice frumkai, they're not religious. The ain tikva shiagadol haben kadas Yisraeli, we have no reasonable expectation that the Jewish or the child will be raised religious. Don't do it. Ein lamolo ulat bilo. A very strong agreement in this area was authored by Rav Kook. Rav Kook, again, we're going chronologically, he died in 1935. Rav Kook, in a tshuva, while he was in London in 1918, was asked a similar question. Im nachon lamul ben shal nachris shiyalda miYisrael. And in a married couple, should you give a bris? This is the exact same shaila that the debate was happening in Europe. He's the Hildesheimer of Kalisher, of Cook, weighs in as well. Im ha'aba ha'im maskim in lahad bilo, gamkin. So the bris was one thing. But now let's say they both, even the non-Jewish mother, agree, yes, you convert the child. Kedim ger katan. Should we do the conversion? Rav Kook was asked. Said Rav Kook, we only convert children, rak im hu ba'ofen kazesh, anu yodin shebegalusi kaim mitzvos. We can be confident that the child will grow up from. Tev emes ha'lo kabolas ha'mitzvos hi ikr shel geirus. Added this tshuva to the first year. The essence of Geirus, says Rav Kook, is Kabbalas HaMitzvos. So, if you don't have that, then there's no way to have expect it from a non-from family, an assimilated intermarried family. How could you do it? Look after the ellipses, a little line later. In Yinshadavar Misbarsh Ein Dadam Klala Kayim Lazar Bisuri Torah. But if the parents have no interest in Frumkite, Maimahani Mashe Mosrno Solageris, who cares that you could go into the mikvah 100 times, it doesn't matter. The Pshita Loadifa Misirosa Meilu Mosras Asmo Lageris Famila Fil. And if the child decided on his own, I'm going to go to a doctor, I'm going to get a bris milah, I'm going to jump in a mikvah, would that do anything? Of course not. Kevisha Chasera Kabbalas HaMitzvos Ein Zu Geris Klal. Cook agrees. More recently, this is 3 day age of Yaakov Yechiel Weinberg. He died in 1966. As a tshuva from the late 1940s, when he, after the war, settled in Switzerland in Montreux, also writes passionately against converting such children or the efficacy of such conversions when they're done. Ein bizmanenu shum zchus l'katan shigayro so befrat b'mishe megadil bebeis horim she'enem mekayim tor b'mitzvos. You cannot say it's a schus for a child to be brought up, to be converted, to be brought up in a family which is not keeping Torah and mitzvos. Hayelad gam kein lo yikayim as a Torah mitzvos. Obviously, the child's not going to keep the mitzvos if the parents don't teach them. Lo zubil vache hakeir is a chusva, and therefore, not only is it not a good favor for the child, hu chov gamur, v'osr ligrom chov ladam. What kind of favor are you doing? This is a Jewish way to we're mamish. It's like taking the kid and beating him up. And then when he heals from his wounds, beating him up again. We're not doing him a favor. We're making it terrible for the child. If the geirus will work, the kid's going to be a terrible avaria, not from his own fault. But so what? How can you do this to a child? It's terrible, he says. Furthermore, he says, it'll be a mikshel. People will think the child's Jewish. I mean, this is really prescient. We all know about these cases. It'll be confusion. It'll create tremendous problems. Chalila v'chalila lalos al daito klal. It's a terrible thing. How could you do this? Ein l'shar l'tares ribui ha-mikhsholim. You can't imagine how many problems are caused by this. And as we saw in last week's year as well, sometimes the greatest ire of the poskim is against other rabbanim. The other rabbanim were playing what they consider fast and loose with halacha, and he ends his tshuva condemning those rabbanim who are doing this. Al yishma l'kol rabbanim toim u'misayim. Don't listen to these rabbis who are confused and are misleading you. Shirotim l'haver Yisrael al daso v'al taraso. I think he's talking another from rabbanim. But how can you do it? Yelchu achrei habailim shiyasu lehem. They'll go after those balabatim. I don't know, maybe it means that they're pressuring him or whatever. They'll do what they're going to do. But anachnu neleich achrei Hashem elokeinu v'nishma b'kola. We have to withstand the pressures. We cannot do it. More recently, in an article about adoption in 1982, Rav Melech Schechter, we mentioned him last week as well, Rav Herschel Schechter's father, just passed away in the last year. He writes, as far as he's concerned, clearly, not a doubt, in our day and age, if the family is not from, you shouldn't do it, and if you do do it, the conversion is null and void. I don't have time. I'm sorry. I'll take the questions once I finish. Let me turn the page and add a very big But there is another side. Who is the other side? Well, we already saw Rav Kalischer. He wanted to convert the child. Now, he said an argument that, well, the kid wants to be like his parents, or in this case, like his father. But there's another argument which seemed to be a little bit, which caught on with at least a few more people, a minority opinion, but still a few more. And here in the very same tshuva we have Rav Yitzchak Shmelkis, who was one of the earliest to articulate it, but I'll show you two or three others that seemed articulated as well. Look at the top of the page. So he starts off by repeating what he'd already said. That presumably, if the parents aren't frum, then how could this be a good thing? But then he says at the end, maybe, we have it underlined, maybe have his chus lager. Maybe it still is a chus for the child, even if he's not going to be frum. The avshe yonish, the child's going to get all sorts of punishments from Hashem, he's not going to keep the mitzvos. Mikam makam yeshlo chelak le'olam haba, Hashem kein yishnach. What do we say at the beginning of Perkei Avos? Right? Avram Fried made it a popular song. Kol Yisrael, yesh lahem chelek li'olam haba. Right? However you want to formulate it, and however impolitical it may or may not be, at the end of the day, we believe in something called the Am HaNivchar, the chosen nation. There's some special zechus to being part of the Jewish people. And even if you're not going to be, so to speak, not to paraphrase, still say, in the front row, you're not going to be living a full life of Judaism, keeping Torah and mitzvos, but just to be on the team, just to be a Jew, you get that special connection, the zechus of the tzibur, says that maybe that's enough of a zechus to say this conversion should be chal. If you take a look in the next source, we have one of the, we mentioned him last week as well, the chief rabbinic authority, certainly in pre-war Lithuania, Rav Chaim Ozer Grudzinski. He died in 1940, in a few short years, 1934, 6 years before he died, he penned the tshuva. And in the end of the day, he's against converting children from non-frum families. It's a mistake. But bottom line, let's say the rabbi did it. Is it a good gerus or not? So he suggests, perhaps, look in the middle, maybe after become makom havas chus, maybe you could still say it's a zechus. And who does he quote? K'moshe kosev, b'shut Beis Yitzchak. Beis Yitzchak that we just quoted. But he says, evshar delo havas chus gamor. He says it's kind of a medium, it's a maybe zechus. So he's willing to accept it, but he's not thrilled with it. Which is why, in the continuation, he says, "Ein lebezdin kosher lehizdakek b'inyanei geiris keilu." You shouldn't do it, but it's something, and therefore, if it happened, at least b'dyeved. Which is why he says, even though the Sridi Yesh years later is screaming against the other rabbis, look at the Chaim Ozer. You see, again, I hate to use the term because it's too cliche, but you see a little bit of the pluralism or the tolerance. Says Reb Chaim Ozer at the bottom, even though I'm not a fan of this. Second to last line, Ein ani mosei lenachon she'ar ishu al zeh rabbani hador. I'm not advocating that we should come out with kol koreis and bang on the bima and criticize those rabbanim who are doing this. Lo tzeis b'machog luya neged hageiros, and they say no, these people aren't doing it. Why? Ki be'enei amei haaretz zeu kechil Hashem. This is going to be a chil Hashem. These are people who, I have this all the time. You can't blame the people. They went to a rabbi. They went to an Orthodox rabbi. And now, all of a sudden, other rabbis are going to get up and say, no, you're not even Jewish. It's a chil Hashem. We don't let, in this case, a non-Jewish woman convert. He says, the bottom line, based on this idea, that maybe this is still supposed to become part of the Jewish people, technically, letter of the law, he says, it's a hard pill for me to swallow, but I can agree that technically, you have a makom to say that they can convert. Therefore, we can't condemn, and especially in ways of credit to Hashem, those who follow it. Rav Moshe Feinstein accepts this idea as well, but he downgrades it even more. It's fascinating. I mentioned last time that a lot of these cases are more likely to happen in smaller communities. So it happens to be the next two tshuvas from Rav Moshe. You take a look. The first one is from Toledo. He's right to the Rav of Abbezin of Toledo. That's not in Italy or Spain. That's in Ohio, the Mud Hens. That's the minor league baseball team. And if you take a look at the second tshuva on the bottom, I love this one. The first one was written in 1941. 33 years later, says Rav Moshe, he's in the summer, Menachem Avu. Who knows where Rav Moshe went in the summer? Take a look. Bekamp, That's summer camp. Shel Yeshiva Seinu, Masifta de Staten Island, right? His son has a yeshiva in Staten Island, and they have a summer camp in the mountains, and Moshe went there in the summer, a camp. And who's he writing to? The Rav of Indianapolis. Not that far from Toledo. Also a small town. I thought that was so interesting. What's the case in Toledo in 1941? Same kind of case that we've seen. And says Rav Moshe there, there's an argument to be made. Maybe you could say to become Jewish is a schus. Look at the middle where I have it underlined. Nachon hadavar kishiyal v'yalad bilu odpam. When this child will hit Bar Bas Mitzvah, we're going to take him to the mikvah again. Why? Because he says, I'm not sure. Lo borer hadavar b'medina zu shehu zuchus. A place like America in 1941, it's not so simple. Kevish abavonoseinu harabim. You can almost be guaranteed Karov Shachas V'Sholom L'Yishmer Shabbos Echadoma Odisur. This child's not going to be raised from. So therefore you should say it's not a Jew at all. But he says, I'm not sure. Efshar maybe. Because Mokum Hu's Chus. It is a Chus, and therefore they should be converted. Sh'af Rishay Yisrael Adifei. V'gam Hu's Chus Nachmaste Nechlev Ma'iv De'ovid Oviv. So what does he do? He conflates or he combines both arguments. First of all, there's a special Chus to being a Jew, per se. And second of all, especially in this case, if both parents were Jewish, it's a schus to be like your parents. You want to be like your parents. The child wants that. It's an enriching part of their life. Again, so schus does not have to mean in some absolute spiritual terms, right? Finding the baseball card could also be a schus for somebody. A child wants to be like their parents. That's a schus in the real world, and it's very in human nature. So Moshe says, but that's only a maybe. He says he's not sure. And therefore, he concludes at the bottom, says Rav Moshe, you know what such a child is, and there are literally thousands of them walking around on the streets in America? A suffix care. He's not sure, but he's not willing to rule out the possibility that maybe it works. A suffix. He repeated the same argument with a twist in this landmark Shuvah 1974. The case was, again, the cases are as fascinating as the decisions. There was a community day school in Indianapolis. Again, you could just imagine in your mind how familiar these kind of cases are. A community day school in Indianapolis started by Frum Rebbeim and everything. What's the problem in Indianapolis? Half the kids are not Jewish. The father is Jewish, but the mother isn't Jewish. So the Shiloh to Rav Moshe was, do the teachers have to quit? Are they allowed to even teach there? It's a halacha about teaching Torah to the Jews, a whole sugya. And Moshe writes with such humanity. I don't have time to read it, but he writes specifically how hard a shilas is for him, especially because it's talking about parnasa. If he'll say usher, all of these rebbeim are going to lose their parnasa. So if he had to, he had to, but Moshe doesn't want to have to. He's looking for what could be the heter, maybe. So in the course of this fascinating discussion towards the end, he says, I have a better... First of all, he defends the possibility of teaching the children if they remain not Jewish. Fine. But then he says, better than that, I have an etza. Efshar latake, in the bottom part, we should convert the children. In such a case of that, being raised in a from home. Here, Moshe introduces a concept which to this day is very relevant in Psak Halacha. But they're going to day school. You cannot compare, says Rav Moshe, these children, in this case in Indianapolis, to many of these earlier precedents in Halacha, where who knows what gymnasium in Berlin or New Orleans public school they were going to. Such that their parents aren't from, they had no shaychus to Frumkeit, they had no connection. Here the children are in a day school. And Rav Moshe, perhaps a little bit naively, but he's very optimistic, there's a good chance if we'll teach them in the right way, and we'll have good teachers, I spoke about that this morning, if we'll have Rav Nachman Pullman, we'll kiss the children, and you'll love the children, and you'll teach them the right way. So there's a good chance that these children are going to want to be Jewish. He even writes at the bottom, again, this is pedagogy, you just get out of the tshuva. He writes there, of course, kamuvan lahazbir hadavar b'ofen tov u'benachas. Right, you have to talk to the children nicely, explain to them, he says, maybe. So he still says it's a suffix. He says it's a suffix, but we have a good chance, unlike in his first tshuva, where it was really a wing and a prayer. Here, we have a real chance that this is going to work out well. We're going to be raised, you know, we showed them the love of Judaism in the tshuva. And I don't need to tell you, how many families was this taka true about? Like, I'm not talking about the non-Jewish case, that's more complicated, but still, I grew up in a small town, I grew up in Cincinnati. You know how many kids went to school there from non-Shomer Shabbos homes who became frum through school, very often then being the kair of their parents, the Heshev Avavos Avonim. Not all of them. It's not a Pollyanna view of history. But still, it happened enough that Rav Moshe had confidence. At least it was worth it. So he reiterates this possibility. I want to close with the last source, which is the most recent, I think. But before I do that, I want to just give you, just so we make sure we're all on the same page. The bottom line is, most poskim feel that if the parents are not frum, you should not do it. And even if you do it, it's probably not good. That's a fact. There's a minority of poskim who felt they're still as close even if the child's not going to be frum. And you have this middle position that sees, well, maybe it's a suffix. Maybe we're not sure. The issue of day school is very, very relevant. Before I give you this last tube, I'll just tell you a quick story. I mentioned in the previous weeks that a lot of this is a contemporary controversy. It's been raging with a lot of issues going on without getting to the politics again. And at last year's RCA conference, a group which I am affiliated with in the committee, they had what they call their Gayrus policy and standards, because they're working now with the Rabbanut Israel to have some kind of a uniform code. And by far the hottest topic for debate was Ger Katan. Because basically the debate within the Rabbanim of the RCA was exactly this debate. Because as I said to you last week, I don't have so many of these kind of extreme cases coming to my desk. But there are plenty of Rabbanim who have this kind of thing all the time. Pressures that come along with it. And I still remember there was a certain Rav who was arguing passionately that we should have very low standards and basically rely on some of these things to convert such children. That the RCA should accept such a policy. And I remember another younger but older than me, distinguished Rav from a very prominent shul, got up in the audience and waxed really beautifully and poetic. I was sitting right in a row behind him. That what exactly the idea? What favor are you doing for such children you're speaking about? Because this rabbi on the podium, so I'm going to be sensitive to the children and sensitive to the parents. And, you know, he painted true objective cases. Of course, he took extreme cases of infertile couples who finally adopted. They have a child, don't child be Jewish, and we have to care about the Galmud, and we have to, you know, the. And he said, what sensitivity are you showing to make a child Jewish when they're not going to keep anything? Again, he was just, in a modern voice, paraphrasing what these tshuvas said. It's not a schus. And then the other guy said, well, it's a schus just to be Jewish. And in his inimitable, understated way, or Herschel Schechter, who was up on the podium, he went this, and he looked at that rabbi and says, you know, this is not a new issue. But most of the, you're not the first one who came up with that idea. There are great poskim who said it's a chus just to be Jewish, it should be enough. But most poskim disagree. One other point which came out of that meeting, which is fascinating, we spoke, Rav Soloveitchik was known, some of the other rabbanim were quoting, well, the Rav told me this, and the Rav told me that. And one of the things that some people were saying is that he told them was, if the kid will go to day school, as long as they promise to send the kid to day school, again, not surprised, like Rav Moshe, you can send them. So we spoke, as our committee, we spoke to Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, and Rav Schechter, and Rav Willig, and they all pointed out that this was not some, like, absolute thing. It's part of a package. Rav Lichtenstein, in particular, was stressing to us that it's really an overall, and this is a certain sense of judgment call, you can't know for sure, and none of this is ideal, but if the situation, you know, the pieces on the board are such that things are pointing in a positive, accepting direction, which is, for example, Lichtenstein said, more important than how many miles away from a shul they do or don't live, and how many miles, or whether the kid's going to go to school, is what's the attitude in the home? Okay, we know they're not from, or else there's nothing to, of course, that's why we're just talking about it, but are they sympathetic, are they encouraging, or are they going to be antagonistic, and everything that the kid comes home from his school, they're going to throw out and they're going to dismiss? Very subtle issues which have to be grappled with. This is real live stuff, and very, very complicated, and you see why now, from the inside out, the issues that these rabbanim, these great poskim, have to struggle with. Let me just leave you with the following case, which is also very fascinating. You just see playing out in Israel. In 1955 and 56, there was a case of a Jewish father, Israeli, married to a non-Jewish woman. And when the boy was 5.5 years old, their son, without telling the mother, he went and converted the child. And there's a big divorce case now. You know, is the child Jewish or not? And the case ultimately came before the Beis Din of Yerushalayim. Who was sitting on the Beis Din at that time? 1955. A special number of AIDS. Ayin Dalat Samach. Hadas, did I pronounce the name? Excuse me. Thank you. Sorry, I knew it was Spanish. Rav Bezalel Zsolti, we quoted him before, also no longer alive. And Lahado Ben Chaim Lachaim, Rav Al-Yashiv. He was distinguished 50 years ago. That's how old he is. Anyway, he was ready on the Bez of Yerushalayim in 1955. And they had this case. This is a heavy, he's a heavyweight Dayanim. Back and forth in the case. And at the end of the day, they agree that most poskim say you should not convert such children. It's not as close, how could you convert such a child? But then they write at the second to last paragraph, that's only l'chachila to convert or not to convert. But what, in our case, the child's already been converted. What's the status? And let's just read this last paragraph. Ein biyadeinu l'hachriya shahageiris l'chala gam b'diyavir. We are not comfortable saying unequivocally that it's nothing. Why? To be obligated in Torah mitzvahs. Right? If you were at Shal Shudas this afternoon, you got a little bit of a sense of this. Just to be obligated in Torah mitzvahs is a benefit, is a schus. But nidbak bezaru shal marvinu, to become part of the Jewish people. But maybe it's not, because this child is not likely going to observe the mitzvahs. I'll call upon him, lo yotze, mide, suffik, care. Not sure. Let's say the child wants to really be Jewish. Who yitzdarech od pam tefila toset v'hatapas tamris v'kabal satorah v'mitzvos kedin kol ger hol v'ata hurak. So here you have, who is he? Who are they? Who is this Bezdin Paskening like? Rav Moshe Feinstein. Now I don't know the way Bezdin didn't work. It's impossible to know. Did all three of the Dayanim agree? The two outvote the one, and who are the two, and who is the one? I don't know. But at least it's possible. Certainly, at the very least, using the one of the living Dayanim, and I don't need to tell you how consequential he is in contemporary life. At the very least, you could argue that at least there's a psak which has Rav Yashiv's name on it. That's also the same as Rav Moshe's. That at least it's a suffix. Again, these type of sfeikos are often more harmful than good. You know, it creates a mess. Because after all, Rav Moshe himself, they both said, when we said before that a child, when they hit maturity, gets to decide, if they decided to be Jewish, we don't say you have to go to the mikvah. It means you're affirming the mikvah or the bris and everything that happened when you were a little child. But Rav Moshe and Rav Yashiv in this third camp are saying, since it's not for sure good, but only a maybe, if they want to, they still have to go back to the mikvah. And they still will have, if it's a boy...
Rav Moshe did the same thing about
Tavastan Bris. Didn't he? Well, I want you to know, I didn't notice that, you may be right. That is a separate discussion about when you have someone having a Bris Mila. So there's usually two extremes, right? Who gets circumcised? Children who do it for ritual and religious reasons. And people who do it for a medicinal reason. Those are the two extremes. What if you have a case somewhere in the middle, not somewhere in the middle, but slightly closer to one side, but not exactly. Then we have people who have a bris mila for religious purposes, thinking that they're supposed to, but they really didn't. Because they didn't do it for totally medicinal or health reasons. They did it for a religious reason. But as it so happens, they didn't need to. Classic example, these cases. A child who was born to a non-Jewish mother and a Jewish father, but they went to their non-Orthodox rabbi and said, we follow patrilineal descent, your child is Jewish. Therefore, get a circumcision. So they got it, maybe they even got it from Moel. They had a perfectly acceptable bris. Too bad the child's not even Jewish. So now, as I like to call it the NCSY case, this child goes to NCSY, becomes from, and thinks that they're becoming a Baal Tshuva. But then either they have an erstwhile or sensitive NCSY advisor, or they go to Israel and they're ready to get married, or somebody eventually figures out, this is not a Baal Tshuva, this is a Ger. They're not even Jewish. So, in those cases, you'll have to take the child to the mikvah, for sure. What do you have to do when it comes to the bris mila? You have to do what's called draw some blood, what's known as hatafas tambris. On the one end, you would say, absolutely, because he never had a halachic circumcision. The baby, he wasn't Jewish when they had the mole and the locks and the bagels. But on the other hand, they didn't do it for no reason. They did a kosher bris, in terms of how it was done. And they did it for the right reasons, just under mistaken assumptions. this is a, which again, that has nothing per se to do with our case, our situation, but it's obviously related, and it's its own major machlokas. And it, there are, and I can tell you that I had, although it was a, maybe a confusion and a miscommunication, but in essence, a machlokas, my first few months in the shul with Rabbi Heinemann about just such a case of someone in our shul who was had a conversion, but had a flawed conversion. And therefore we decided, I had consulted with Gedalia the first week, and decided, we weren't sure, maybe it's a flawed conversion, maybe it's not. What do you have to lose? The person wanted to be sure. We took them back to the mikvah. You know, to do the mikvah again is easy. But the question is, does this person need hatafas tabris? And I actually, at the time, argued no. Because of these poskim who say, even though in that case it was a flawed circumcision, it's a flawed geiris, but it was being done not for medical reasons, it was being done l'shem religion, l'shem kedusha. At the time, Rabbi Heinemann didn't know he needs one. So when we act, just as a PS, just to show you, I'm not sure there was a machlokas, because when we actually sat with the person at the mikvah, and we were discussing, even though I thought I would be clear about some of the particulars over the phone, when they were the other two dayanim, one of whom was Rabbi Heinemann, was questioning the person about the situation, then Rabbi Heinemann looked at me, and he had his bris bag, and he says, what do I need this for? He doesn't need a bris. So I had to do my best not to totally smile. I said, Rabbi Heinemann, I thought we discussed this. So he thought about it, and he said, well, it's my focus, and if he's willing, let's do it anyway. Which is not, I'm not saying he was wrong. Because a lot of these questions, technically, yes, no, they're all in very difficult situations where the person, no, I am Jewish, no, I don't, you know, where they're not willing to resolve the doubt. So then we have to decide, how do we view the person? But if a person is willing to say, I will go the extra mile to resolve any doubts, so you don't have that much to lose. So in that particular case, we actually did both the mikvah and the tefillah. But that could be Barry why he doesn't mention it, because it could be that he holds it in such a case you wouldn't need it. Yes, Jacob.
I think that they missed the most important part. When a child male is being converted, then by the age that he gets married, if he married a Jewish girl, then the children will be Jewish as well, and he will be forgotten one way or another. If he thinks that he's Jewish, he can continue to be Jewish. But the most important of all of that is when a female is being converted, then you have to really deduct the very, very much from that. The next year, nothing was talked about.
That wasn't the case. They were talking about boys. But of course you're right. Of course you're right. Of course, obviously, if we're confused about the status of a female, it's going to have more ramifications because she's going to have children, and we need to know the status of those children. Of course.
I think the bigger issue. I mean, I don't think it plays itself that so with such difficulty with a female, because with a female, it's not. You know, with a male, it's obvious. You know what I mean?
What do you mean? No.
What do I mean? It's physical.
You mean
a male? It's physical. With a female, there's nothing that, you know, the father would care about a male because there's something he has to do.
Okay, maybe.
Maybe. The issues are not. Though.
Maybe. Okay, it could be. Okay, it is interesting. It is interesting that all these Shilas were with boys. Because obviously they are just applicable theoretically. Did you have your head right there? Yeah.
I didn't quite understand. The people with the rabbis with the most liberal point of view that said it's a benefit to have a child be like its parents.
Mm-hmm.
They are balancing that as more important than the world to come, than all the hates that they're going to be making, and
it's not simple. I think what they're arguing again, they must again that they. What Rav Moshe mentioned both, and even some of the others who didn't mention both, again, you have to assume that they're bringing into this idea that there's even from a completely spiritual perspective, not just the human perspective, even the spiritual perspective, you know, this objective benefit to being Jewish. Now, how does, after all, and some of the public, again, I didn't read every one of these lines inside, but some of the authorities mentioned, after all, such a child, assuming that he's raised in the way that we're fearful of, the quote, silver lining will be that he'll be what we call a shogeg. He won't be fully culpable because he didn't know any better. So, what exactly will, again, and you ask me, I don't know. The Rambam writes very clearly, we don't know exactly how people are treated in the world to come. I don't know that. You have a child who's brought up his whole life, did thousands of averos, not realizing any better. So, you ask me, again, this is a broader question than just tonight's topic. Rabbi, theologically, what is the responsibility ultimately of such a person? I don't know. I'm not sure. Yes.
You know how we talked about with Toledo and Indianapolis and all these little towns smattered all over the country where these are big issues that happen all the time. When I was growing up, I grew up in a little town, and half the kids became from, and then half intermarried. But the half that intermarried, in not one case did anybody want to be religious, had no shakas to Yiddishkeit, but the rabbi, an Orthodox rabbi from a well-known Orthodox rabbi, he agreed to convert all these people. We thought because of pressure from the board or pressure from the shul.
Maybe.
But until 2 weeks ago when you started talking about the Beis Din, then I realized we had no Beis Din in the small town. So we had to go to, they had to go to the next small town, not the next big town, which was close by, and there were all these well-known rabbis, whatever. That means those rabbis that sat in the Beis Din agreed with our local rabbi who was converting every Tom, Dick, and Harry in town. And it just dawned on me, how did they get them all to agree to do it?
Well, the first obvious answer is I don't know. I wasn't there. But I will just tell you the following. First of all, I don't know. Again, it could be that your rabbi had other... I understand, yes, I understand. I once heard a lecture by somebody who deals in medicine. He says, we're going to leave out all the names to protect innocent and the not-so-innocent. So, first of all, it could be that your rabbi had more noble instincts than you're giving him credit for. Not necessarily. I alluded to the fact that sometimes there's a lot of pressures brought to bear on rabbis in these cases. But it could also be that he was relying on some of these issues that we're mentioning now, which... You know, there is a limud zchus. We could defend such positions. But the second thing I'll mention is on a very practical level, very often with these cases, you didn't necessarily run to another town to get three, so to speak, equally qualified rabbanim. Very often, to this day, if you'll have one hopefully qualified rabbi, he'll get the shamus and the chazan to do it. So I don't know that he necessarily ran to the big town, I'm just make up a name, Chicago, to get two other rabbanim of equal or greater stature. It could be that there was two old men in the back of shul who he said after they finished the herring, can you come with me to the mikvah? I'm not joking.
So it doesn't have to be a sitting based in the
No, it does not have to be. It does not have to be. No, you, the people who are the Bezdin are also, when you sign, I was at a conversion, actually at the one conversion of a child, the baby that I was at, was a fascinating topic on a whole other, to make it more complicated an ingredient, it was with a surrogate motherhood child question, where the egg was from a donor. I think we've discussed in the past, it's a huge machlokas, who is the halachic mother, the donor mother or the birth mother? And what was even more subtle in this case was that as far as we knew, the donor mother was also Jewish. But according to some poskim, you have to be worried that maybe they weren't, even though they told you they were Jewish, and the organization, the fertility clinic that you went to said, we checked. Some poskim still say you still should do a conversion. We didn't make any brachos because it's only as a chumrah, but I was once involved in such a case. Interesting thing was I was living in Riverdale at the time. The family and Rabbi Will, I was one of the three, okay? And I was just, you know, young me. I didn't eat herring in those days. Once I became a rabbi, I started eating herring. Those days, I didn't eat herring. But it's an interesting thing. Their rabbi from the community was there, who was a major Talmud Chacham. Rabbi Willig was there, and then he thought I would enjoy to be part of such experience. It would be a learning experience for me. He called me. That morning, I went to the mikvah. But the family and their rabbi were from nowhere near Riverdale. Why? Because just as I'm just giving you the human interest aside, they didn't want anyone to know. Everyone who knows them, including their own parents, they told me. They told me that I'm one of the few people. The rabbi, me, Rabbi Willig, and the doctor are the only people who know. That's what they told us. Even though parents think that this is a couple that was married for years and it was infertile, and now, Baruch Hashem, the tefillah was answered and she conceived. Baruch Hashem, she had a baby, but that's not exactly what happened. They went to Israel and they went to a clinic and they had a surrogate mother, they had a donor egg. But we ended up doing the conversion. So it's true, just to mention the two hats that we wear, for the records, there's two different documents that we sign. One as witnesses, and then one as dayanim, you know, attesting.
What's the qualification to be a dayan?
In such a case, relatively low. Relatively low. You hope at least one person knows what he's doing. I'm just giving you the case that I told you about with me and Rabbi Heinemann. The person went through a conversion with an Orthodox Beis Din locally. It was not the Baltimore Beis Din. It was not a sitting Beis Din. It was an ad hoc group. All three people who signed that, I believe, are Orthodox. They might even all have had three rabbis in front of all their names. But it was not really such a good conversion, quite frankly. It's a very difficult parsha. And without being overly cynical, unfortunately, to be realistic, in some, I don't want to say all, but in some of the cases, it's unfortunate that you have to acknowledge the fact that there's also money involved. I don't mean a bribe per se, but people charge for their services. I've never gotten or ever expected to get a penny to even be involved in this. But there are plenty of people who charge. Again, sometimes they really put in time, especially if they're learning with the Ger for many years, for months or something. There are expenses. I'm not saying they shouldn't even charge. I'm not saying that. But I'm just saying that, you know, what can I tell you? When there's money involved, it doesn't always get glut. Okay. Yes, one last question, and then we'll retire to help the Hellers finish all the wonderful food they left on the table. You cannot leave unless you eat something.
You mentioned that,
and that is a psak from a distinguished rabbi.
You mentioned that the issue hasn't come up so much in Baltimore. Is that because it's sort of been resolved what people do? Because I assume there are dozens of non-from couples adopting non-Jewish babies.
I don't know what they're doing.
Who want to have Mila and just perforce most of the Mila or Orthodox.
I'll tell you the truth. Yeah, it's a good question. It's a good question. You have to speak to the Moalim, which I did not. What I was alluding to, and I said, was that from speaking from the Rabbanim's perspective, we do not have, not only in Baltimore, but it's true probably about most big, more vibrant from communities, I don't have that many people knocking on my door saying, I want to convert. Whereas I have friends who are Rabbanim in small and outlying communities, it's a significant component of the rabbin. In certain shuls, in certain ethnic communities, I think Rabbi Posey told me this summer he spent time in California in a small community in the capital in Sacramento. I think he told me, I hope I'm not mistaken, quoting him wrong, I think he said half the shul were Gerim. I'm hoping all good conversions, I'm just saying. But there's communities. When I was a summer, had a summer kollel years ago, I headed a summer kollel in Harrisburg. Pennsylvania. The non-Jews were coming for chavrusas everywhere. I had to turn them away. They all wanted to learn Kabbalah, Ivrit. I don't know what to do. I just wanted some Jews to come and learn Torah. And it's somehow, and I remember when Rabbi Posey called me, he called me almost every day when he was in California with Shilas, and the first, you know, when it was like, not a single normal question. He was like, So I said to him, it's great, we'll talk about it, but I said, I'm not surprised at all. I mean, some of them were surprised, but that's because as you go to Sacramento, this is what happens. These are the type of Shilas you get. So I don't have an exact explanation for why, because like you said, the bottom line is that somebody, you know, there's not. So the truth is that there are things going on, even by rabbis who may have Orthodox ordination in town, which I don't get involved with, and probably if I did get involved with, I wouldn't like. That's true, but I'm just speaking for myself. The only conversion that I've been involved with from local Baltimore are the cases where we have people in our shul who had questions, you know, about their old conversion. In one of the cases, it was a Baltimore conversion, and in one of the cases, it was a California conversion. But, you know, what the explanation exactly, why in small towns more people are interested, I don't know. You know, when I say small towns, of course, I mean with the exception of Los Angeles and New York, which are very big towns and have lots of people who want to convert. But even then, it's not in Queens, it's not in Teaneck. I mean, I'm not saying you have individual cases. It's on the Upper West Side or in Manhattan where the rabbis who are there have throngs of potential gerim coming to them, or I assume in those, whatever the parallel shuls would be in Los Angeles. But the more, Hamish shuls of whatever variety of Orthodoxy don't usually have so many cases. Whatever, someone else will figure out why, but I just think it seems to be a sociological reality. Thank you very, very much, and I hope this was educating and edifying.